Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Continuing the Conversation, a prevention podcast. My name is Allison Barden, and I'm the director of the Madison-Chatham Coalition. Today, I am pleased to welcome Dr. Dana Casperine, who is a PhD, LPC, and LCADC. And I'm going to let her introduce herself and tell us what those letters mean. So thank you so much, Dana, for being here.
Thank you, Allison, for having me here. It's a pleasure to be here and be a part of this amazing coalition. So as you said, I have a PhD in clinical psychology. I'm a LPC licensed professional counselor and a licensed clinical and alcohol and drug counselor.
Could you start by giving us just a brief description of Counseling of Life and just sort of kind of what you see here and what you deal with?
Sure. So Counseling of Life is a private practice. We see individuals, couples, and families. We work with adults, children, and adolescents. And we do mental health counseling as well as substance abuse counseling. We also provide individual therapy as well as group therapy. And we also do substance abuse assessments along with other psychological assessments.
So our topic for today is going to be co-occurring disorders. A lot of what we see in the communities that we serve in Madison and Chatham, the teens that we work with and that we are trying to serve, there is some mental health issue sometime or, you know, something like that in addition to substance use. So maybe you could start by telling us what exactly co-occurring disorders are, and we can go from there.
And what we consider co-occurring disorders, what that means is that there's usually two diagnoses that we deal with a client. So for example, someone has depression as well as substance abuse. So it's basically acknowledging that there's two diagnoses that we need to be treating at the same time. You know, we call that a lot of times in the hospitals dual diagnosis, meaning that there's going to be a substance abuse diagnosis as well as a mental health diagnosis. So they kind of go hand in hand. And when you treat them, it's important for the clinician and the treatment program to provide treatment to focus on both of the disorders. So it's not just focusing just on substance abuse and ignoring the mental health piece, and it's then not addressing the mental health piece by itself and ignoring the substance abuse piece. It's important that you basically, at the same time, treat both diagnoses so that they can have a more well-rounded treatment plan.
Would you say that in the clients that you see, or just, you know, in the teen population in this area that we serve in general, is this common? Is it, you know, are co-occurring disorders common?
Yes, I would say so. You know, it's unfortunately, we always, when it comes to substance abuse and a mental health disorders, like the chicken or the egg, which comes first? Is it there a mental health diagnosis that leads to substance abuse, or is there substance abuse addiction or use that causes mental health? And usually what we find is that they most of the time go hand in hand. If you do find that people are using substances and you dive deep into why they're using substances, you will pretty much almost find that there's an underlying reason that they chose to use the substances.
So with that being said, we know that they're prevalent, you know, in this teenage population. Once they're diagnosed, once you see them and, you know, you see that this is what's going on, how do you treat both?
That's actually a great question. I think the most important thing at first, when I see somebody who comes to me for substance abuse, the number one problem and the number one reason that they come through the door is because there's substance abuse. They either got in trouble at school or their parents found a vape or found them using marijuana. Some sort of mental substance abuse piece has been reported, and that is what shakes everybody up and brings them into treatment. And then through treatment and processing and assessing their substance abuse and why they're using substances, how often they're using substances, you do find a pattern with adolescents mostly, that it's either with friends or it's, you know, or it could be alone. It could be before they're going to go to school. And it could also be before they're about to go out and be with friends. Whatever it is, whatever the pattern that we see, it shows that there's something else. There's something they're masking. They're self-medicating so that they're able to handle and cope with a situation better. So we consider that to be self-medication. So through that substance abuse assessment and learning the different patterns of when and how and the triggers of substance abuse, we then can see, well, you know what, there might be this underlining concern and there's a reason why they're using the substance. And that's when we pick up and assess for the mental health part. And we learn they're very anxious before they go to school, they have social anxiety, or before a party, they don't really feel comfortable being with a bunch of people that they might feel low self-esteem around. So then they use substances to kind of wash that away and be able to cope better while they're there.
So would you say that anxiety and depression are the most common mental health disorders that you're seeing once you've, you know, diagnosed or once you've found that there's a substance abuse issue as well?
So speaking on adolescence, mostly there is low self-esteem. And when it comes down to, I mean, every single adolescent questions their self-esteem, questions themselves, questions. I always say to adolescents, you have to start to be comfortable in your own skin. But they don't know what that looks like or what does that even means when they're growing. So, you know, there's so much going on in the world today. Social media, pandemic that we're going through, social fitting in, popularity, different crews. Are you going to play sports? Are you going to do an activity? Are you going to be part of a certain club? It's so much that they go through. And as adults, we kind of forget. We say, oh, God, we're adults. We have to pay bills. We have to go to work. We have all this responsibility. We kind of forget how hard it was when we were adolescents and how much of a struggle that was to just be in our own skin. And so when we work with adolescents, we see a lot of times that they don't know necessarily how they fit in. And that's a common across the board. The problem then what happens is you might have low self-esteem, but you are able to get through that and work through it and establish good coping skills, have a good support system, and be able to handle it in a way where you don't necessarily end up turning to substances. However, there's other people who don't have that ability or maybe don't have such a strong support system or do have an influence that is maybe leads a little bit down the substance abuse path. And then it's so much more severe that it then turns to depression or anxiety. And what we see a lot with adolescents here, Counseling of Life, is there's that underlining and the diagnosis usually is either depression or anxiety. And, you know, under the anxiety umbrella, we do see a lot of OCD. So yes, mostly depression and anxiety is what we see here.
Knowing all of this, you know, if you're working with an adolescent on these issues, how do you engage parents in this process, in this treatment process? So what tips, I guess, do you have for parents that are looking, you know, to help their teen manage this stress and anxiety that just comes along with being a teenager, like you were just describing today?
I mean, that's great. I mean, that's a great question because as parents, we are always first to blame ourselves. We always blame ourselves for everything we do and everything we don't do. We blame ourselves. So that is a great question. And, you know, I really take a family system approach to any kind of therapy that happens when it comes to adolescents. I always remind the adolescents that they have confidentiality rights and that everything they say between us will stay between us. And I always keep that promise. But then there's always that family piece that I encourage and I incorporate into therapy because you can help change somebody while they're sitting in front of you and help come up with great coping skills and great strategies. But when they leave and the parents aren't on the same page, it falls to the wayside. So having everybody involved in the plan is the best way to make change. I always applaud parents when they bring their child in for substance abuse. You know, I always get the phone call of a parent saying, oh my God, my kid got caught marijuana. How did I not see that? How did I not know? And they got caught at school. This is so embarrassing. I am so embarrassed. I didn't know. How could I have not known the first signs? And I always remind them, it's okay. You know, you're not, that's the part of substance abuse that you're never going to understand is the manipulation is so, it's a skill that if adolescents would use their manipulation to positive things, that would be wonderful. But manipulation is something that they're very good at, and they make parents think that they're okay and everything's safe. So I always applaud parents who bring their children in either before there's a substance abuse, when they notice that there's anxiety and or depression or OCD or even oppositional defiant, any reason that they get their child into therapy right away, because that could prevent substance abuse. Most of those signs and symptoms that you do see could possibly one day lead to substance abuse, because they're going to self-medicate and know, and once they try it, they're going to learn, wow, this really feels good. This is really kind of taking me out of my own skin and making me feel safe, and I'm able to talk to people, I'm able to be more social, I'm more comfortable. But then I also applaud parents who maybe miss those signs and then bring their child in the first sign of substance abuse, because it's never too late. It's never too late to make a change. It's never too late to get on top of something that is important. And the first signs of substance abuse is the, you know, is the best thing they could do. And I always encourage parents, do not blame yourself. Let's just move forward. Let's move forward as a team and get the help that your child and your family needs.
You know, we talked about parents, about, you know, parents bringing their teens in when, you know, the first sign of anything that's out of the ordinary. What about teens? What do you tell teens that you work with that are trying to juggle all of these different stressors in their lives so that they don't feel like they need to turn to drugs or alcohol to self-medicate?
You either have an adolescent coming to you kicking and screaming at the door that you have to spend some time establishing rapport and winning them over. And the only way that they're going to be successful in treatment is if they feel comfortable with you and they feel safe. So if you have someone coming in the door kicking and screaming and is very resistant, you really have to take a different approach. You have to take the approach of letting them feel comfortable, safe, heard, and understood. But then you have adolescents who can't wait to get in here and talk to somebody who's not going to judge them, who's not going to go tell somebody else what they said, you know, and have, you know, they shared with their friend, but their friend told a friend. This is somebody who is completely safe and completely neutral, and it's refreshing for them. And I encourage them and I remind them that this is their safe place and that everything and anything that they need to talk about should be done here. And then it'll be done confidentially, safely, and with no judgment at all. And then working through what exactly stresses them out. You know, what might stress me out absolutely is not the same thing that might stress them out. And I've always said that to clinicians that I've taught in the past as a professor or even supervise. I always say to them, the piece that might stand out for you might not necessarily stand out for them. So even though you think that them failing their math test was a big piece, but it was them sitting in a classroom with somebody who might have bullied them is the hardest part. And you're thinking, well, let's figure out how you can get extra credit from your teacher to do good on the test. It's not about that. It's about how they felt sitting in a room with a bully that made them not be able to focus on that math test. So it's really taking that person's situation and individually picking it apart to find the true root of the problem, and then letting their stressor be the stressor you work on.
It sounds like that's something that parents can do also. You know, sort of you're talking about thinking more broadly. You mentioned your stressor might not be their stressor. So really for a parent, kind of getting down to what the root cause is, so that that's something that can be happening, you know, in a peripheral sense to what they're learning with you in a session when they're dealing with that as well. So switching gears a little bit, what do you see are the most common substances that are being used by teens?
The most common substances I'm seeing are vaping. That is a big concern right now. But I also see marijuana, alcohol, and, you know, unfortunately, pills. I do see quite a few adolescents who have taken advantage of pain pills that were in their house or some sort of anti-anxiety like Xanax or Klonopin, and, you know, abusing them. I've also seen, and I think that's why it's so important for parents and for schools and for everybody who is on board with adolescent substance abuse prevention, is understanding that marijuana is a gateway drug. Vaping is a gateway drug. Alcohol is a gateway drug. They all are. You know, they're the ones that we can, you know, catch sooner than later and change. You know, and unfortunately, most adolescents that I see that are using substances for a significant amount of time and flying under the radar and not getting the help that they need and the attention they need, they do turn to something stronger. And what I've seen is them turning to pills, because they're able to get it from their house or a grandparent's house or a friend's grandparent's house or somewhere. And then using pills, and usually it's pain pills. And then what happens is they're too expensive or too hard to get a hold of, and they turn to heroin.
The Madison Chatham Coalition is really focused on the prevention piece. So we're all about primary prevention. So what role do you think that, and just to give you some examples of what we do, we work with the schools and host events like Hidden in Plain Sight, where a DEA agent comes in and sets up kind of a mock teenage bedroom and shows parents all the different potential hiding spots, you know, that they could be using for various substances. We host webinars on, you know, that we have different speakers that we contract with to give parents more information about different substances. You know, we do things like this podcast just so that parents have more information. So knowing all of that, what more do you think that a coalition that's focused on primary prevention can be doing to support teens in our community, knowing what you know and, you know, kind of knowing what you're seeing when you're working with these clients?
Well, first, I would just like to say something for parents. The most important thing you could do is listen to your children. And when I say listen, really hear and listen to your children. And even though as a mom myself, our first reaction is to react, but to sit on your hands and really just listen to what they're saying. Let them feel safe. Let them feel heard and have that conversation with them. Have that conversation that's so hard to have, to tell them that you are there for them, that you are, no matter what they do, no matter what situation they're in, you will always be there for them. You know, you might be disappointed at the outcome sometimes, but that you'll always be there for them. The worst thing any parent can do is regret not doing that and knowing that their child got in the car and drove, or got in a car with somebody who was driving, who was under the influence, and their child getting severely hurt or killed, and saying, wow, why didn't they call me to pick them up? I would have been okay with that. They don't know that. They don't know that unless a parent tells them that. You have to tell your child. You can't sit there and say, I'll be so disappointed in you, but say, I will always be there for you. I understand you're going to be going to a party. You are a senior in high school. But if you ever get yourself in a situation, I promise you, I will pick you up and be there for you and your friends no matter what. Just knowing that gives them that peace of mind. Most kids who make poor decisions, the first thing they'll say to me was, I didn't want my parents to know. I didn't want my parents mad. I didn't want my parents disappointed in me. So if parents could have that hard conversation, that is the most important thing that they can do for their child, is to tell them they are there for them. And then what the coalition, I think that all what you're doing is wonderful. All the things that you're doing to help parents and children is amazing. And thank you for all that you are doing and all that you do for them. And I really, there's nothing more I can suggest than to keep doing what you're doing and to reach out to them. You're not going to reach everybody's ears. If one person hears you and you can touch their life and change their life, you've accomplished so much. And just to keep doing all that you're doing and being there for both parents and the kid and the adolescents, that's the most important thing.
So what are teens and parents citing as stressors? Like, what are they saying are their most stressful things that they're dealing with right now?
Well, right now, COVID. Unfortunately, COVID is something that everybody across the world is sadly facing. And, you know, I do hear parents say even themselves, like, oh, gotta hit the liquor store, gotta make sure we're stock up on wine. And I don't think parents realize that, even though that's something that maybe they need as a coping mechanism, that it's also showing a little influence on their child. So, you know, maybe getting the wine and stocking it up, but maybe not making it a funny joke conversation in front of their children. Right now, the remote learning is a huge struggle for both working parents, non-working parents, and children. You know, being home with our children, teaching them virtually and without any structure and routine, because we're doing the best we can as parents, is a struggle for them. It's a stressor for both parents. It is a struggle for children. It's a struggle for everybody. I know that I have a PhD and I failed my son at third grade math last year. It was a struggle. I couldn't understand what they were saying, and I completely agreed with the that movie, The Incredibles Part 2, where he said, math's math. Why'd they change math? I get it. It's hard. And I saw my children struggling, not understanding it, and me not being able to teach them because I'm not a teacher. I'm not an elementary, middle school teacher. So I couldn't understand it myself to teach them. And then the frustration on both parts of the child and the parent. It is a really tough place we all are in right now. Another stressor that I would say is a big one in children, adolescents right now, mostly high school, is college acceptance. These poor students have so much homework and work to do. It's never ending for them. And then on top of it, you know, it's okay, if you want to get into a good school, you need to take AP classes, honor classes, and then you need to get A's in them because you can't just have them on your transcript. You got to get them on there, but get them as best as you could. And they don't realize sometimes that these students are drowning in this work. It's so much. And no matter what parents say to the schools, it's what the curriculum is, it's how it needs to be. But there's so much pressure. And letting the children, you know, letting your child know that it's okay. It's okay to take a break from homework. I had one patient the other day and I said, do not do any more work. Eat something and go to sleep. Be done for the day. You know, it is okay. That paperwork will still stay there. That homework assignment will still stay there. That messy desk will still be there waiting for you. Don't worry about it. Eat something and go to sleep. You just need a mental health break. But schoolwork right now is so stressful. Getting into college is so stressful. Having to do all that work and fill out the applications is so stressful. And then there's the stress of, am I going to make a team? I have to try out. Am I going to make the team? Am I good enough to be on that team? And then once you get on that team, the competitiveness of being on that team. And that starts younger and younger. We're starting sports and activities so much younger than when we were younger. And it's a pressure. And that's something also that we need to empower all our adolescents to say, you do your best. Your best is enough.
With everything that you're talking about with COVID and everything that's happened over the course of the past 8 months, one positive, I think, is all of these mental health tips. And you know, sometimes for some people, though, too much is not a good thing. You know, there's so many resources that are available right now. But in your opinion, do you think that we are going to see, like, in this teen population right now, are there going to be lasting effects? And what do you think those might be? You know, people being in quarantine for so long, and you know, now people maybe being scared to go out in public again, and with cases rising again, you know, and for our teen population in particular, as they go to, you know, move on to college maybe, or you know, move into a professional setting, what could the long-term effects be, and how do we address those now?
That's a really great question. You know, the funny part, I was speaking to someone yesterday, and the truth of the matter is kids are more resilient than we are. we feared that the kids at a young age going back to school wearing masks would be a struggle. They'd be pulling them off. It would be horrible. They wouldn't wear them. They'd be resistant. And to be honest with you, my kids grab their masks before school like it's nothing. I'm the one who forgets it. And, you know, they're fine. It's becoming part of their routine. And I think that since we're the ones struggling, since the parents are the ones struggling with the masks and the restriction, we know more because we lived more without the restrictions. They don't really know much else, depending on what age they are. I think just reminding them that they still can be happy, they still can have a life, they just have to be safe. I always encourage parents to watch what they say in front of their children. The opinions and the statements of parents, the kids grab onto. They're like sponges, and they will hold on to that, and that'll become their belief. So it's really important to have that adult conversation, not with them sitting there, not with them engaged, because the conversation you need to have with them is that there is a light at the end of the tunnel, and that this is just our now, and that we are able to function and do certain things as long as we're safe. And that this might be our new norm for quite some time, but it's okay as long as you are safe and protected. If you stay positive as a parent, then they will. If you make it a big deal, they make it a big deal. If you are okay with it, they're going to be okay with it. And I work with high school students and college students, and I do see the struggle of them not being able to be with friends and doing certain things. But I have to tell you, they're doing more than we think they are. And they're handling it a lot better than adults. So I think it's just that we as adults need to be more remain positive and to realize that what we say and do and act and feel needs to be positive when we're around adolescents.
In your opinion, what role do parents, schools, and the community just in general play in mental health promotion and substance use prevention?
So that is a loaded question.
Yeah. That's a long one.
You know, schools always have to play a huge role. And I always tell teachers when I do in-services that they are the first ones who will notice withdrawal, change in any symptoms, any change in character, change in appearance. The teachers are the first ones who notice it. And the teachers are not supposed to know what to do with that. They're not trained mental health professionals. They see that their student is withdrawing. They see that they're starting to hang out with different friends or maybe not hanging out with any friends. They notice that their appearance isn't looking the same as it usually did. Maybe their clothes look like they've been wearing them for the same amount of time, wearing them every single day. And that is the most important first step. You know, the teachers need to then contact the SAC counselor, a guidance counselor, somebody in the school to get involved. And that could be life-changing for a child. If you notice them, who knows what's going on at home? They might be the first person who actually took a caring or a concern of that child and making that child feel that somebody actually finally paid attention to them, you know, or could be that they started using some substances or hanging out with a different crew that is kind of taking them down a different path. So schools always, and not to mention when we're not in COVID, we are there. The students are there 5 days a week, 7-8 hours a day, if not extracurricular activities, if not longer. So they are really at school more than anything. So school has to be involved. And the community and parents, you know, everybody needs to be on board to support one another, especially during this horrific time. You know, we need to all come together. So community is a big piece. You know, everybody should be on the same page. I always say it's moving to certain towns where you know that there's that big community piece. It's like having eyes on your children, even if you're not there. Everybody should work together to be there for each other and to be there for each other's child and children. And to be aware of changes in the community and changes in children in the community, and to speak out to the right people, not to each other and have a conversation to just talk about what's going on, but actually help make a change, either contacting the school SAC counselor or a guidance counselor or an administrator, somebody that you feel comfortable with, just to point out some changes that you do see in the community that could be maybe addressed, or reaching out to a parent of somebody that you're concerned about and helping one another.
Dana, thank you so much for talking with us today. I think that we have a lot of good tips and we've learned a lot of really good information that I think parents can definitely grab onto and, you know, start using in their homes with their teens. And it was just great to hear your perspective as somebody who is working, you know, with teens dealing with co-occurring disorders. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. And I'm happy to help any way I can.
For more information about Dr. Dana Casperine, as well as Counseling of Life, please head to www.counselingoflife.com or call 973-255-9580. Please listen to some information that Dana Casperine has to share about FELA, an organization that she founded.
Counseling of Life also does team up with a nonprofit organization called FELA, Families, Adult, and Youth Life Awareness. And what FELA does is it's a nonprofit organization that provides awareness to communities on mental health and substance abuse. What FELA also does is they customize a plan for schools and any organization, actually. And they customize a program to go into schools and provide in-services to either guidance department, to the entire staff, or to even assemblies for the students on the topics that are of concern to their town.
For more information about FAYLA, please go to FAYLA.co.